Welcome to the Invest with Clarity podcast, where you will learn how success in investing, as in life, is the result of absolute clarity. Mark Pearson of Nepsis in Minneapolis, Minnesota, shares his passion for portfolio management and commitment to transparency and communication to allow investors to fully understand what they own and why, bringing them to clarity in their investments. And now, here are your co-hosts, Matt Halloran and Mark Pearson.
Hello and welcome to another Invest with Clarity podcast with Mark Pearson. Our last podcast talked about diamonds in the rough, and we're going to continue on that kind of philosophy and that track, but we're going to switch gears just a little bit to talk a little bit more about different kinds of really investment management, because last time we talked about how you can find these diamonds in the rough, but today we're going to talk about how you can really uncover some amazing things if you're just maybe just a little bit more active than we know that a lot of financial advisors are. Mark, where are we going, brother?
Well, first of all, Biggie, let me tell you, it's good to be back at the golden microphone, as our good friend Chuck would call it. It's good to be back, let me tell you.
You know, you sound so much better when you're going from a headset at your home office to a $8 million recording studio.
Did you say $800?
It's a great mic. I do know that. But yeah, you definitely sound a lot better, dude.
Thank you. Well, it's good to be back. So yes, when we talked about diamonds in the rough, obviously we were referring to the idea of finding great businesses on sale in a nutshell. And we're now in May, of course. We're coming to the latter end of May. And of course, the big talk coming out of April after April's strong month was what's going to happen in May. You know, April showers bring May flowers, right? And so ironically, May has not been too shabby, come to think of it. In fact, it's been fantastic. And it goes to show you that timing the market, so to speak, is a ill-fated bad strategy, because you miss some of the strongest days of the year within the market, you could be missing out substantially. Today's Thursday, so I think it was on Monday or Tuesday, some news came out about a potential vaccine from a company, and the markets were up like 3.5 to 4%. Well, the average, if you were fully invested for basically a 20-year period from 1999 to 2018, the average is 5.6. And here you could have gotten it all in one day. And what's interesting is if you miss the last 10 best days, you are only up 2%. So you've lost 3.6 percentage points by missing the 10 best. You missed the best 20 days, you're down 0.3. A lot of people have seen these charts before. A lot of the reason why people try to time markets, right, is their mentality of investing, Matt, is I invest in the stock market. I own thousands of companies. And I think there's a convergence of a lot of different things happening here that really give me a strong confidence that going forward, at least for the foreseeable future, the mindset of the investor is going to move away from cookie cutter static investing to what's called active investing, because there's a lot of people that are asking their financial advisors, and this is what I'm hearing from advisors, they're asking their financial advisors, why did we not take advantage of these businesses on sale? Why did we just stay the course? Well, old modern portfolio theory, as you know, is you asset allocate and you stay the course. Investors emotionally get predisposed, Matt, and they don't know what they own. They don't know why they own it. And therefore, they freeze or they go to cash out of fear, uncertainty, and doubt. In the meantime, as Jim Cramer says on Mad Money, there's always a bull market somewhere. So if you're an well asset allocated portfolio, he calls it there's always a bull market somewhere. I call it there's always a diamond in the rough. And people got all worried, again, emotional about the May pullback, the market's quote-unquote pullback in May, but here you've had a unique period. And what people don't understand, Matt, is there are so many variables that drive prices of businesses or drive markets that you can't try to guess short-term what's going to happen.
Okay.
And so
let me pause you there. Hold on.
Yeah.
Here. So you're talking about not timing the market, but you're also saying that the people who do the buy, hold, and hope, because you've said that in a previous podcast, they are timing the market too. What's the difference, dude?
Well, they're timing the market if they're going to cash because they're asset allocated in thousands of stocks and bonds. So they're pulling all these stocks out of the market and they don't even know what they're pulling out. And I think this is where the disconnect's going to come as we come out of this, is people are going to say, look, this is going to be a new economy. Nobody's debating that this is not going to be a new and different economy. And so are you going to want to own airline stocks? Are you going to want to own hotel stocks? Are you going to want to own restaurant stocks? Anything that, even Disney and the Disney parks, at least for the foreseeable future. Now, a lot of people may be saying, well, we don't own a lot of those stocks. Well, if you're in mutual funds or exchange-traded funds, chances are you do own them. And I go back to the original point I made in the beginning of the podcast. In investing, it's like going into a football game, a baseball game, whatever sport you want to play, right? Into any competitive event. When you go to a competitive event, you always want to know everything you can to be smarter, stronger, faster, better than your opponent, right? Well, when you don't even know what you're invested in and you don't know why you're invested in it and you own thousands of stocks, you're inefficient in your portfolio. In other words, you are going into a competitive environment already at a disadvantage. And that is what investors are going to have to start coming to terms with in a world where everyone focuses on this modern portfolio theory process of own the market, if you will, own thousands of stocks and asset allocate using modern portfolio theory in small, mid, and large cap, emerging markets, international bonds, real estate, yada, 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 yada. But it's not always a good time to own real estate. It's not always a good time to own metals and oil, i.e. what's going on right now. When you're investing, you have to think of it as it's you against the markets. It's you trying to stick to your investment objectives and goals and get the best rate of return you can for the risk you're taking. To get the best rate of return for the risk you're taking, you have to be in a position where you have every advantage in your hands to help you do that. Clarity is the number one most important piece of that.
Now, let's clarify diversification again, because
yes, please.
We talked about that in a lot of different podcasts. Some would argue, especially people who are in modern portfolio theory, that if you do own thousands of companies, therefore you are diversified. But I want to take that one other level, because you just talked about metals and oil and real estate. As a financial services professional, is that something that you talk to your clients about investing outside of the market to have a different kind of diversification?
Okay, so let's clarify what diversification means and what asset allocation means. Diversification means you own a lot of the same investments. I go back to 1999 and 2000, the crash of a famous mutual fund company at that time, you probably remember, where they had phenomenal returns for several years and then they crashed and burned. And investors would come in and say, but I thought I was diversified. And the answer to that is, yes, you were diversified. You owned a lot of the same kinds of businesses, large cap U.S. tech stocks. Okay, you own 10 of those, you're diversified. But if that's all you own, you're not asset allocated. Asset allocation means that you own small, mid, large cap, you own growth, you own value, you own emerging markets, you own international, you know, all these asset classes is what you have to call it. That's asset allocation. You can diversify within those asset classes. You know, people ask me how come our performance in 2020 has been so good so far. Now, full disclosure, got to say it, past performance is not indicative of future performance in any security I mentioned today. We are not recommending you go buy. But our portfolios are significantly outperforming any index you want to look at right now. I mean, our clients are down very little relative to everything going on. And the one question people ask me, and I think this is really important, Matt, they're like, well, when the whole crash started, how much did you have in cash? I mean, had you already been selling? Were you already in cash? And I said, no, we didn't have any cash. And they said, well, if you had no cash, how were you able to take advantage of the volatility? Because people will ask, well, how do you take advantage of volatility if you're fully invested? You take advantage of volatility because you were properly asset allocated. So while you're going through the crash, not everything is going down. Not everything is going down at the same speed. And when you have the flexibility and the transparency to pick and choose where to go and what to do, you are constantly realigning the portfolio while staying asset allocated and taking advantage of the diamonds in the rough. Now, you may want to rewind that and listen to that about 10 times because that's a lot of info there, but that's really how it works. And investors don't even understand that because they're so used to focusing on, well, I can buy this ETF for this cost. This firm only charges me, you know, 25 basis points. I got an email from a client once that said, you know, I get charged X amount of fee, and, you know, that's a lot of fee when it comes to, you know, what I'm being charged at one of the robo ones at 25 basis points. And he said, you know, your fee's quite a bit higher. That means you have to do quite a bit better, quote unquote, than the market. He says, how do you want to address that? And I said, first of all, your fee is actually really good. It's lower than what most people get because you're one of my friends and original clients. So bear that in mind. Number two, we don't invest in the stock market, so to speak, and we don't compare portfolio performance over year versus an index. Why? Because you're not invested like an index, and no one is invested like an index if they are properly asset allocated. Mm-hmm. That's why the whole idea of comparing your portfolio to the S&P 500 is a joke. It's hogwash because 100% of your money is not, frankly, should not be invested in just the S&P 500. And so what we've had now is an event, Matt, where the markets have gone down faster than any time in history over a short period of time. It's a shock measure, right? When people get shocked, what happens? A lot of times they wake up, they get a dose of reality, and they go, hold on a second. I just saw Disney at X or Square at Y or Visa at Z. Why couldn't I buy that stock? That's because portfolios are inefficiently managed.
We're going to take that one level down. Okay, so making sure that you're appropriately asked.
Hey, by the way, now that I'm seeing you on video today for the first time in a while, it's funny watching you with your wheels spinning. I mean, your wheels are spinning. Are you trying to? Yeah. Are you going to try to take me down again?
I am. But the problem is you can hear the grinding too. So it's not just you can see my brain working here. Well, okay. So you know, I know that you firmly believe that the stock market is the greatest way and the greatest opportunity to buy unbelievable
businesses. Take advantage of capitalism.
Yeah, absolutely. But what about things outside of the market? Do you believe that that's part of real asset allocation?
Without question. So let me give you the best example I can, and I'm not sure if you were setting me up on this or not.
No, because see, that's not how you were supposed to answer that. You were supposed to say no, Matt, after 2 years. No, I'm kidding. Keep going. Go ahead, man.
No, the reason why I do believe in it is because it's about investing in great businesses. And not all great businesses are publicly traded. And so when you look at opportunities of investing in great businesses, the first question you want to ask, of course, is, you know, is this a great business? And what are the criteria that I'm using to determine if this is a great business? The second question then becomes, okay, I like this business. Do I own too much of this kind of business that's publicly traded? Am I going to be over allocated in a certain area? And if you want to be over allocated in a certain area, that's your own call. That's your own business. I don't think you need to be, but that's my own opinion. Okay. I think you can find great businesses in lots of different areas. And so when you look at private companies and you look at the opportunity to invest in them, are they great businesses? Number one. And number two, do they fit within the asset allocation strategy? And if they do, then you've got to buy it. And We will do more private equity in the future. We've done one private equity deal now that did go public, and we may talk about that one on a further on a future date. So we'll leave it at that.
Okay, that's good. But very well done from the compliance standpoint there, Mr. Pierce.
Thank
okay.
you.
Now,
Thank
one of you. The other things that you talked about on a previous podcast, and I know that you don't make predictions, right? We've had fun conversations yes. about that. But we've talked about, is this going to be a V-shape, U-shape, or W-shape recovery? Do you think that we're already right. in one aspect of that recovery?
Without question. It's funny you asked that question. We thought it was going to be V-shape. If we were going to predict, if you were going to hold my feet to the fire, we thought V-shape. And the premise is pretty simple. I think a lot of people want to overanalyze things and try to show that they're super smart, and they may be super smart. I just like to use common sense on a macro level. And from my perspective, think about how people are already revving up, getting frustrated, and just dying to go out to dinner, dying to go out and do things, travel. I mean, people have been pent up now for over 2 months. And what's happening is, which I think is the right thing to do, is the economy is opening up slowly. And there are pockets that are opening up all over the place faster and faster. And what investors don't understand is that most money managers make investment decisions and predictions not based upon how a stock or an economy has done in the past, but how it's going to do in the future, generally 12 to 24 months out. And everyone said from the beginning that this was going to be a short-term event, that eventually the economy would reopen. So the economy is reopening, and what money managers and economists are looking at now are comparables. What was unemployment in April? What was manufacturing in April, May, March? And they're seeing every month it's going up. Well, as it keeps going up, you're going to see the markets move higher just because, and I'm not saying that's the right thing. I'm not saying that's good, that it's going to get overvalued or not getting overvalued. I just think that majority of people who invest think short-term, not long-term. And as they see the economy continue to improve, they're going to see markets move higher. This is why we're now at the highest level on the S&P today, going back to, the NASDAQ is now back to levels it was in February before this whole thing happened.
That's fast.
So the NASDAQ's up like 4 or 5%, right? Ooh. You're seeing a V-shaped recovery.
Okay.
Now, it may not be as super fast as you want to see it, but you saw things bottom and you saw things moving higher. And now, the S&P's down, 8 or 9%. The ACWI is down like 11.5%. Emerging markets are still down pretty big, around 16%. But the bottom line is, it's not 20, 30, or 35%, and there's no more doom and gloom. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of these great businesses are going to survive longer term, and especially the businesses that will prevail in what I would refer to as a new economy. And that's why we invested the way we did.
Do you have any... Now, I know that you're not giving specific stock recommendations, and we can pre-qualify them, but sectors, right? I mean, so you had just talked about, airline stocks, restaurant stocks, hotel stocks. I mean, those sorts of things, they've really gotten hit really hard, and they're probably going to be hit hard for a while.
Right.
But do you see, because of this new economy, and since you pay such close attention to it, you got a great team, are there any sectors that you guys are just kind of eyeing, saying, this might be a great long-term business strategy?
Yep. Well, certainly technology, I believe, has always been a great sector. I was in the technology business before I came in this business. I have a passion for technology, technology stocks, researching technology names. And we have owned and do today own some tremendous technology stocks. Now, again, I'm not making recommendations, but you can go read the Nepsis 13D filings that are put out each quarter, and you can see the technology names that we own. And we own some pretty big winners. We've got stocks that are up, 20, 30, 40, 50% this year, even in this market, from January, not from when we bought them. Our largest holding now, I'm not going to mention because it wasn't that case at the end of March, but since we started buying that stock in the midst of this financial crisis, it's up about 116%. So in about 2 months, it's up 116%. These kind of companies are the kind of companies that will dwell well in a new economy. And that would be your technology. Also fintech. We bought Visa and MasterCard on the day they went public, you know, 10 years or gosh, it's been longer than that now, 13 years ago. And when you watch Visa go down to $135 a share from 220 or whatever it was, that's a gift. Now it's back to like 195, but I mean, it's the, this is why I pound the table with our advisors, Matt, and I pound the table with clients. And there's going to be no greater example of this than what's happened with our clients' portfolios right now. And that is that you have to have volatility to create alpha. You really do. To create any level of significant alpha. You know, there's a lot of people out there who try to create a 0.5% or 1% of alpha by doing lots of guessing, right? By using lots of different hedges and long, short this and yada, 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 right? But alpha is created not over short periods of time. Alpha is created over long periods of time. For those who don't know what alpha is, it's a statistical measurement of the return in your portfolio relative to the risk that was taken. And so when you look at, let's say our portfolios are down 3% year to date right now, and the ACWI is down 11. Well, on the surface, that looks good. But see, no one ever asks you how you did the year before, right? They always ask you how you're doing in that year. Well, the year before is actually more important, because the year before, if we did as well as we did, which was generally 20-25% above an index, and now we're outperforming the index on the downside. Generally speaking, on the downside, you hope to just stay even with the market to lock in that alpha from the year before. Well, here, you know, if we're down 3 and the ACWI is down 11, you know, statistically measuring, that's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So that was created because of volatility. It was created because of flexibility. Now, again, for full disclosure, this is a snapshot in time. You know, it's not indicative of necessarily what's going to happen in the future. And quite frankly, this is part of the reason why we don't publish returns, and we won't.
Now, you also just said something, and interestingly enough, I cannot remember you bringing up some of these other investment strategies on other podcasts, and that just could very well be that I just didn't ask you the right freaking question. But so let's talk about long, short options, those hedging things that there are a lot of advisors out there that do some stuff that personally, now this is just my own, makes me very uncomfortable for somebody to do with the money, because that's, I would say that that's not substantial volatility, of course, by the way that it is truly defined, but that is a lot of risk. Talk about that for a second, will you?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of long short. I'm not a fan of hedging unless I have to. There's two forms of hedging that I've done. Now, the only time I have ever done what I would call market hedging, index hedging, which is a hedging against the entire economy, which is a longer term issue, right? Was the financial crisis. We hedged financials, we hedged oil. I mean, oil went to $146 a barrel, and I was like, okay, that's just ridiculous. So we hedged oil down, not because we thought oil was going down, but because we own 3 or 4 oil companies and we wanted to protect the oil investments. That leads me to the second form of hedging, which is my favorite form of hedging, quite frankly, is hedging the businesses I own. So it's been very often that I have bought a company and something has happened bad with that company, and we still like the long-term fundamentals, but we don't know how long it's going to recover. So we'll buy another company in the sector that's doing well to hedge our position against that company. So we'll do individual company hedging. Another form, of course, of doing that is options. I'm not a big fan of doing options unless it's for very extreme cases where there is a huge amount of capital gains involved and you want to protect the downside of a large position in a client's portfolio. That's a much more technical conversation. Sure. I'm not opposed to it, but it's a very, very rare occurrence.
And I'm not qualified to even ask you the question.
Yeah, no, that's okay. You know, and when it comes to the markets, I didn't hedge in this market. Because number one, it happened so fast, and we knew what the cancer was, and we knew the cancer was going to be gone eventually. And so it wasn't like the financial crisis where that went on for about a year and a half, right? This is going to go on for 3 to 4 months. And it's already recovering because people know it's going to dwindle, and people are already looking at the economy coming out of it. The economy is way stronger today than it was when it went into the financial crisis. More importantly, banks are much stronger today than the financial crisis. It's a very different crisis. And again, that's why I'm not a fan of cookie cutter portfolios, because every crisis is a little different. I mean, since I've been in this business, I've seen the Russian ruble deal in the mid-90s, the Asian contagion, 9/11, the tech bubble, the financial crisis, and now coronavirus. I've had 6 crises that affected the markets. Every single one of them was different, and not one of them could you have predicted. And so that's why asset allocation is so important, volatility is so important, and lastly, having the flexibility and transparency to take advantage of those showers to bring you some flowers can hopefully enhance your ability to invest with success.
All right. Well, I think with that, we're going to wrap this up, brother. How's that sound?
Sounds like a plan.
All right. If you have not subscribed to the podcast, make sure you click that subscribe now button below. That way, every time we come out with a new podcast, it'll show up directly on your listening device. And if you know somebody who truly needs clarity in their investment life, please make sure that you share this podcast with them. And also check out the website, nepsis.com or investwithclarity.com, and find out a little bit more about who they are, what they do, and what they can do to help you truly live a life with clarity. So for Mark Pearson, this is Matt Halloran, and we'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
The content discussed is for informational purposes only. It is not a solicitation or recommendation for any securities that may be mentioned herein. Advisory services offered through Nepsis, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor.